Recent revelations about government surveillance programs have led to concerns about how much personal privacy Americans should hope to have. But as it turns out, corporations are also gathering data on us. Over the last few years, a multi-billion dollar industry of consumer data collection has sprung up, made up mostly of unregulated companies who collect details about individuals through social media networks, public records, purchase histories, and online searches. Emily Steele, the media and marketing correspondent at the Financial Times, has written a series of articles that look at this scramble for consumer data and how it's used, what it's worth, and if and how it's possible to protect your privacy. Emily Steele, welcome back to our show.
It's great to be here. Thank you.
What kinds of details are these data broker companies collecting?
It is fascinating. These companies know thousands of details about individuals. It's everything from basic information like your name, your age, if you're married, what your income is, to very, very sensitive information such as if you have certain health conditions like cancer, depression, or diabetes, or if you're taking drugs, or if you're pregnant, what your exact due date is, and if you're expecting a boy or a girl.
And how many of us do they have information on? Pretty much everybody?
These companies have information about hundreds of millions of consumers. There is a big data broker. Its name is Axiom. And that company has information on about 700 million different consumers all across the world. And they work with more than 7,000 clients that they sell that information to.
So can you walk us through how this data is gathered?
So,
for example, if I look up the weather forecast on an online weather site, would that be something they'd be interested in?
Right. So if you go, it's almost every single activity that you have in life today is tracked or monitored in some way.
They're listening to this radio show right now, I hope.
They could be.
Because we need the ratings.
If I tweet about it afterwards, they'll scrape up that data and figure out that I've been here. They also, in the digital landscape, they'll look at, these companies will kind of track and monitor all of your searches, all of your activities. If you're on social media, if you're posting things to blogs, if you're posting pictures, they're able to track all of that, those bits of information, and figure out if you're in the market to buy a car, if you are a middle-aged woman living in Detroit who has four kids and needs to buy a minivan. But the information collection doesn't just stop there. Companies also can collect data from your mobile phone. So if you're walking around the city, they can know where you are at any given time based on different signals that your phone is sending out.
Why would they want to know that?
For some reason, some marketers say that it can be really, really valuable to know where you are at a given time so that if you walk past a Starbucks, they could give you a coupon for a Starbucks. But it also paints a picture of this portrait of who you are. And at the end of the day, these companies are trying to influence you. They're trying to influence what you buy, what you think, how you act in the world. And the more that they know about you, they think that the more they're able to do that.
Now, the NSA is building a huge facility in Utah to store all the stuff they collect. Where is this stuff stored?
There are hundreds, if not thousands, of these different data broker companies. Some of them are big companies like Axiom or Experian that you might have heard of before. But then there's also companies like this one called Leads Please that I found based in Arizona. And they will sell lists of consumers with a wide array of information. One of the ones that I thought was most sensitive and most interesting was this list of prospects or consumers that have different diseases, or like cancer and diabetes, or if they're taking certain very specific prescriptions as well.
So they're collecting information about my health, and then they're selling it to pharmaceutical companies?
Right, or health insurers. We don't really know kind of where that information ends up. And one of the most interesting things that I found in all of this reporting is, as an individual, you think that you're pretty important. You think that you're pretty valuable. This data is being sold for fractions of a cent. So if just basic age and gender and location information will go for 50 cents for 1,000 people. So divide that by 1,000, and that's how much you're worth. If you are searching movie information, that's $3 for 1,000 people. If you're going to have a baby, that's $85 for 1,000 people. And the most valuable that I could find was this healthcare data, which was $260 or 26 cents per person.
Now, when did this industry get started?
It's really interesting. A lot of the roots of these companies, a lot of the big companies like Axiom and Experian, were started decades ago. And
Before computers provided them with this kind of information.
Exactly. And they really have their roots in the direct mail business. So they would collect information from public sources. So mortgage records, driver's license details, birth records, death records, kind of they would collect information from birth announcements in newspapers. And even one thing that I found really fascinating was they would get information about babies that were born based on photography companies that would go into hospital rooms and take pictures of newborn babies. So these companies would assemble these very rich profiles and then sell those to direct marketers who would turn around and target you with messages in your physical mailbox.
Well, when I go to a store and I pull out one of those cards that, in theory, gives me a discount, that's not going to one of these companies. This is going just into the database of the store, which also often asks me for my zip code and sometimes even my email address.
That is the case, but those store cards also can collect information and then sell that information to outside companies. So these outside
data brokers. So they share this information.
So they'll share that information. I've also reported before about how some of the big credit card companies like MasterCard have started to sell aggregated, they say anonymous aggregated data about the actual transactions that people make as well.
Well, what would anonymous do? If it's anonymous, then how could they use it?
They say that they strip your name from this, but then they'd still be able to target you with things like your location or if they know where you've been or the different websites that they're on, they're able to sync it back together. And that's one of the things that's happening, one of the big trends that's happening right now is about a decade ago, it used to be very, very controversial to link information about a person in the online world and their lives away from the computer screen. DoubleClick was this huge internet company, and they tried to acquire a company called Abacus, and it was their idea to create these master profiles about a person that would track everything from what they were searching for, what they were posting on the internet, the emails that they sent out, to the products that they bought in a store. But the FTC investigated that, and there was this huge privacy outcry, and the company backed off. They decided not to do that anymore. So for a long time, companies really kind of held back, and they just thought that these were two separate worlds, and we're not going to combine them.
You're suggesting that has all changed.
And then in the past couple of years, yeah, it's all together. It's all changed.
My guess is Emily Steele, who is the media and marketing correspondent for Financial Times. She's been writing about all of this consumer data collection for the Financial Times. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. How competitive is this industry? Can numerous companies have the same data about individuals, or do they diversify by focusing on one thing or another?
What we've found is that competition is at an all-time high now. These companies already know very basic information about you, hundreds of bits of basic information about you. So that means that in order for them to stand out, in order for them to profit on selling this information, they have to dive even deeper to figure out even more intimate, more personal secret details about you. So there's one company that I found that they already were in the baby market. They already knew 80% of births that happened in the U.S., and they wanted to go deeper. And so what they did is they linked that data with another set of data to be able to figure out a mom's network. So who were her neighbors? Who's the grandma? Who are the aunts and the uncles? That you could be able to figure out who the relationships around this person are and how can you send them information as well.
All they have to do is look in a registry, don't they? A birth registry or a wedding registry. They find out an awful lot about who is who's going to be generous,
right,
for example.
Right, exactly. But I think most consumers think that when they're creating these wedding registries or birth registries, that it's a message between me and my friends, the people that I've sent this out to. I don't think most people think that the corporations behind that are tracking and selling that data.
Well, there's that story that has been told a lot recently about Target sending information about pregnancy to a young woman and her father becoming outraged. And then he sent an apology.
Right, right. And apparently this happens all the time, and not even with Target. Tons of other companies do this. I found a mom who, before she had told her friends, her family, she already was getting information about her being pregnant in the mail, and she had no idea where anybody got this information from. And I just thought that was such a fascinating example.
So how did they figure it out?
What people say is that there's a wide range of sources you can go to. If you go onto a baby website, there's a lot of websites that will go that you can enter in the day that you're expecting your baby. And as soon as you do that, and as soon as you get these email updates, they'll send that information along.
You have a calculator on the Financial Times site. We have a link to it on our show page at WNYC.org. Can you tell us how that works?
Right. So we thought one of the most fascinating things with all of this coverage, and I've been working on stories about this for a number of years now, was that we never really looked to see how much all of this cost. It's in aggregate, it's this massive multi-billion dollar industry. But on the individual level, what is an individual worth? And I started talking to some of my sources, and they said, you know, most people are not worth that much. You probably are less than a dollar. So we thought it would be really cool to be able to figure out if we could create a calculator that would represent some of the examples of this data that these different companies are selling and let people see kind of how much they're actually worth.
So would a millionaire be worth more to them because he or she has more buying power?
Right. So a millionaire is worth more. If you are having a baby, you're worth more. Part of the way that marketers or the companies that are buying this data will look at this whole world is, are you at a stage in your life where you are about to make a lot of spending decisions? Are you at a stage of your life where you're about to really change up how you're living? Are you getting a divorce? Are you getting married? Are you searching for a car? And bits of information like that are very, very valuable.
Did these data mining companies talk openly with you about how they work and what certain data are worth?
So I got a lot of this information through my sources directly who work in this business. That's one thing that's very fascinating about this industry is that it really operates in this very shadowy, unregulated world. There's very few laws in the U.S. that regulate privacy and the privacy of a person's information beyond whether it's used for employment or housing or insurance or other decisioning purposes. And so to get these companies to talk about very transparently about their business practices is a very difficult thing to do.
Did they tell you that social influence is more valuable than practically anything?
So that is
how one, do they measure that?
There's one company called Clout, and they are a very interesting startup that kind of came about with this idea that online we're all sharing information, we're collecting these networks of friends, and for marketers it could be very valuable for them to target people who have a wide degree of influence over their friends. And so what they've done is they've created these different algorithms that measure, number one, what your areas of expertise are. Number two, how people in your network will react when you write about those different areas of expertise. And number three, what is that worth to a marketer? And so what that company found is that if you have a higher degree of social influence, if you tweet about something and a million people go buy it, then you can be worth about $3 a year. That's what that data is worth. And it's interesting.
So I'm going
to
start endorsing things on the show just to raise my own value.
You have to be careful, though. There's other restrictions about making sure people know it's an endorsement.
Now, listeners have been writing in, by the way. You can write to our show page at WNYC.org or reach us on Facebook or Twitter, where our handle is at Leonard Lopate. And Marianne on Facebook asks, isn't sharing your health info a violation of HIPAA, H-I-P-P-A?
So what these companies will say is that they are not trading in exact pharmaceutical records or medical records. and it's some sort of derivative of that. And as soon as it's not the exact record, if it's some sort of self-reported information or information that's been stripped of certain identifying details and then re-kind of mastered together into this portrait of a person, then that's okay right but now, the way the regulations stand.
So if I get a prescription filled at one of the pharmaceutical, at one of the pharmacy chains, they're not going to have my name attached to the drug that I have gotten?
So I'm still tracking down how this whole world works, but what I just was starting to uncover in the past couple of days is that there's a huge chain of companies that when they get the pharmacy will get the records and they'll take off a person's name but leave on other information that you'd be able to know kind of your gender, your age, about where you are, and sell that information on to other sources.
So I can get something in the mail that says James Smith or current resident, and it's really aimed at me.
Right. Exactly.
My guest is Emily Steele, who is a media and marketing correspondent for the Financial Times. We will continue our conversation after we take a little break. Stay with us. And we are back with Emily Steele, who is the media and marketing correspondent for Financial Times. We've been talking about the expectant parent market. Is that particularly valuable because that's kind of like a lifetime commitment?
It's hugely valuable. It's one of the most valuable times in a person's life. Not only are you, especially for new parents, not only are they going from living a single life where it's all about them to a world where they are buying diapers and pacifiers and all of these products they didn't even know existed?
Well, as you mentioned before, you've written about a woman whose mail was flooded with marketing and advertising for baby furniture and other baby goods as soon as she became pregnant. How would they know? Because she bought a pregnancy test at the pharmacy?
So there's a wide array of information that these companies would be able to track that down from. So they could know because she bought a pregnancy test. They could know because maybe she signed up for an email on a site like babycenter.com that will, every single week, it will say you're in the 13th week of your pregnancy, the 14th week of your pregnancy, your baby looks like a lemon. These are the different things that you need to know right now. There's a lot of the companies will go through maternity clothes stores, furniture stores, and look at their shopping records as well.
And I mentioned earlier the rewards cards that some stores have, but a wide range, drug stores, grocery stores, even pet supply stores. They're obviously not looking on my keychain where I keep them, but I could see where it might be valuable for the local supermarket to keep inventories supplied, but do they sell them to some of these other collection agencies?
Yeah, so that information is part of the main reason why it's collected is because these retailers can sell that data on to another company. And it can be really valuable for a big marketer or a big organization to know whether or not you buy dog food and you're a dog owner, or if you drink soda or you don't drink soda. Something very interesting that's happened just in the past couple of months is Facebook has struck a partnership with some data brokers that collect information about people's shopping histories. They've made it possible to target people who buy diet soda and who've bought even Diet Coke in the past couple of months with ads on that site.
Now, another listener, Elizabeth from Brooklyn, asks, can consumers sabotage this data collection using a variety of tactics such as phony names and searches that are irrelevant to yourself?
You know, I guess you could try. My mom, she's been reading my stories for a very long time, and she will buy things in cash. And she, when she goes up to the stores and they ask for her zip code, she'll give people a different zip code. So I think that there are some things that you can do to make their information not right. But one of the most fascinating things that I've found is you can opt out of receiving ads online that are targeted to to what people think or what these big companies think that your interests are. And you can opt out of receiving direct mail if you go to a certain website that I list in my article. But one thing that you really can't do is opt out of having these companies collect profiles about you. And it's also really hard to get these companies to agree to show them, to show you the information that they have about you. And so it's this very murky world where these companies might know thousands of things about me that I don't even know myself.
And they may have inaccurate information, because we've seen that with credit reports.
Right.
When they're willing to show them to us, and often they are not.
Well, credit reports are interesting, because in the whole data privacy world, that's a very highly regulated area. And so consumers have the right to get a free credit report. I think it's every year from each of the big three credit reporting agencies. And you have the right to then go in and correct that information. But there are very few outlets that you can do that right now with digital information or profile information about you that's used for marketing purposes.
So I can't go to Axiom and say, what do you know about me?
Well, it's actually very interesting, because they're in the midst right now of rolling out this whole new product that they say by the end of the summer, if everything goes right, you should be able to go and see what does Axiom know about me.
Now, how have they become one of the biggest data mining companies? What is the secret to their success?
So they started in, I think it was the late 60s, in Little Rock, Arkansas, and they just really gradually built out this business that for years and years and years became the master of amassing all of this information about consumers. And in 2011, they hired a man named Scott Howe. He's a big name in the digital advertising and the digital media business, as their new chief executive. And they've now spent the last couple of years really trying to realign and reposition their business so that it would be a powerhouse in the digital age as well.
And they have a partnership with Facebook, don't they?
They do have a partnership with Facebook.
How does that work? Is that why Facebook users may have noticed that ads on the site are targeted? For example, if you change your relationship status to engaged, suddenly you get ads for pre-wedding weight loss programs?
It's funny. It's actually even more intensive and more extensive than that. It's not through this partnership, marketers are able to target ads at you on Facebook, not just based on the information that you have entered onto the site, but also about your shopping patterns in the real world or your activities in whether or not you're shopping for a car or about to have a baby. And you might not have posted it on Facebook, but one of these companies might know.
And we get a similar thing with Gmail. Now, are these things just limited to Facebook and Gmail, or are they disseminated to other places as well?
Those are some of the best kind of windows into this world where you might be able to see this happening most dramatically. But over the past couple of years, the online ad industry has emerged to become basically this massive buying and selling of digital data, where these companies are able to buy data about you and then target an ad on a website so that what you see might be different than what I see based on what I'm interested in.
Do privacy settings do anything?
There are some things that you can do to opt out of being targeted online. You can make it so that you don't allow third-party cookies or tracking cookies. You also can delete your cookies.
On the other hand, to some degree, we're inviting all of this, aren't we, when on Facebook we talk about pretty much everything in our personal lives?
And that's one of the kind of the balances that people have to figure out. How much are you willing to give up? How much are you willing to put out about yourself? And once you do that, it's not your information necessarily anymore. It's these companies to be able to profit off of.
Except most of them are unaware that this is happening, despite the fact that they are often surprised. Wow, that ad just came up just as I needed to know about fencing. How did they know I was thinking of buying some fencing?
And that's one of the concerns that a lot of privacy advocates and even lawmakers and regulators have, that most Americans, most people have no idea that this tracking and targeting and kind of mass profiling is going on and that their data is being bought and sold for fractions of a penny. And they really are trying to seek more transparency into this business so that people do know that that's happening.
Well, there used to be a do not call list that allowed people to opt out of telephone marketing calls, but we don't have anything like that in this industry.
Well, you can opt out of receiving or seeing targeted ads online, but you have to know there's this website. It's aboutads.info that you can go on and opt out of all of this information. You can also opt out of receiving different direct mail. And there's one place that you can go online. There's this company. It's called Bluekai, B-L-U-E-K-A-I. And they have a registry where you can actually see the information that they've collected about you from both online and offline sources.
And can you delete your profile there or at least correct wrong information?
On the Bluekai registry, you are able to delete your profile and correct information. But with other companies right now, you aren't able to see the profile, you're not able to delete it, and you're not able to correct the information.
One of the companies you've written about is called ALC Data. Can you tell us about it?
So they are a company. They're a couple of decades old. They're based in Princeton, New Jersey, and they have been kind of the master of selling lists of consumers for a number of years. So if a marketer wants to buy a list of new moms, they'll sell them a list of new moms. If they want to buy a list of people who are buying a car, they'll sell them a list of people buying a car for something around $85 per 1,000 people. Or they'll be able to identify new homeowners or dozens of other categories as well. One of the most fascinating things that's happened over the years is that these companies traded in the offline data, kind of this very bricks and mortar bits about your life. But there's new technologies that have emerged that have allowed marketers to buy that information and translate it and find you online and connect this whole world all about you.
And now if they find a way to connect with the NSA, they can know pretty much everything.
Exactly. One interesting point that I just was reading about today is a blogger made a point that much of the info that the NSA is able to kind of vacuum up and collect, part of the reason why that exists is because companies are harvesting it in the first place.
My guest is Emily Steele. She is the media and marketing correspondent for the Financial Times. She's been writing about the collection of our personal data for a series of articles in that newspaper. The fear is that collecting this private data about individuals could lead to discrimination. Have we seen any examples of that?
That's something that I'm really trying to track down right now. I have uncovered some instances where a credit card company, for instance, will show you different offers based on what they know about you. And it's not an actual credit report, and it's not an actual kind of actual credit score, but they'll figure out different things about you to figure out if you need a travel card because you're traveling a lot or if your credit rating is not likely to be as good. And there's also instances that some people have uncovered of big insurance companies or other companies using this data to predict when you will die. Even President Obama and his political campaign used this data to not just target the messages, but target what he was saying in a way that would most influence people.
Well, if you call an insurance company to get a quote on car insurance, for example, they seem to know everything about you almost immediately.
Right. And I just was talking with a colleague on the way over here that what some companies are starting to do is when you call them for help or you need customer service or whatever, they'll decide how long you'll wait on that line based on your profile. So companies are assigning customers lifetime value.
So if you're seen as an annoying person, you're going to get a different line than if you're seen as somebody who might very well be a valuable customer.
Right. If you're someone who's going to spend millions or hundreds of dollars with a company over the course of your life, then they will treat you really well. You'll get the extra special customer service. If not, you might go to the end of the line and just quit, cancel anyway.
A caller wonders if there are benefits to this for consumers. Do they get better deals on product access or products or access to more information?
What the industry will say, what a lot of people in these companies will say, is that what they're doing is helping to target the right ad to the right person at the right time. And so if you're shopping for shoes and someone gives you a coupon when you're wanting to buy those shoes, that's so beneficial as opposed to you seeing an ad for cat food and you don't even own a cat.
Jaron Lanier, who was one of the people who helped develop the internet, was a guest on our show in May, and he believes that we should be getting paid for the personal data that Google, Yahoo, Facebook, and Amazon and others are collecting about us. Because he says that information is valuable. Companies are making billions selling it. Is there anybody advocating for that sort of thing?
So this is actually one really fascinating area of this whole debate. There's been a couple of startups that have tried to give consumers the ability to profit off of their own data, but most of them have really just sputtered out. And what a lot of these companies have found is that an individual's data on its own is worth zilch, but in aggregate, it's worth a lot, lot more.
We have very little time, but you mentioned that a company like Axion is international. Do other countries have more restrictions than the United States?
So in Europe, especially, the privacy laws there are a lot more stringent or a lot stricter. But even privacy advocates say that they're woefully inadequate.
And Europeans are pretty much experiencing the same sort of thing that we are here?
Yes, yes.
Well, the United States Federal Trade Commission began investigating the data broker industry. Was that prompted by anything?
They have been very keen on learning more about the privacy business for the past kind of couple of years, and they very much focused on the internet world. And now they are really diving in to figure out how this whole industry operates.
So we'll have you back when we find out more about that.
Great.
Emily Steele is the media and marketing correspondent for the Financial Times. Thank you so much for being on our show again.
Thank you very much.